People, welcome to the Most High Show. My name is David. I am your host. And this is a place where you see real stories from real people in real life. And today, the person that's going to be sharing this seat with me and the discussion of his journey is my brother, a man of many talents, Austin B. And we'll see. And but first, after we return from these messages, we're going to hit your brain up with some information with the recovery rundown and the topic of the day. Hit him with the intro, Jeff.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
And now for the recovery rundown.
Understanding the differences between inpatient residential treatment facilities and outpatient treatment facilities can make the process of choosing one a little bit less complicated. So allow us to break it down for you. Good inpatient treatment centers will provide clean and comfortable accommodations for patients to live in while they are immersed in intense therapy, meetings, and other services that have been designed based on each individual's needs. These services often include medically supervised detox, therapy, and aftercare planning. Many of these places combine these traditional strategies with a variety of special approaches like art, music, or even equine therapy. Inpatient treatment is a preferred option for those looking to escape their current temptations and completely focus on their sobriety with no distractions.
The typical inpatient stay is from 30 to 90 days. And according to a recent analysis, the average cost is around $16,000. Of course, that price can soar into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the location and length of treatment.
Now, outpatient programs allow those in recovery to get the specialized help they need while still maintaining the ability to tend to home and work responsibilities. Intensive outpatient therapy, or IOP, can be just as effective as inpatient programs. However, mental health stability, history of relapse, and home life often determine which approach is best. Many outpatient facilities offer treatment programs that call for a commitment to daily therapy and counseling sessions. IOP is typically structured for several meetings per week that work to achieve milestones in recovery.
Similar to inpatient treatment, outpatient costs can vary widely depending on the length of treatment and services provided. It's often more affordable because there's no room and board involved. Pricing for outpatient treatment can be as low as having no cost and can be as high as several thousands of dollars. Most insurance plans cover the fees, including Medicare. Out-of-pocket costs of outpatient treatment are often tax deductible.
Okay. Now, let's say you've gone through medical supervised detox and completed an inpatient or outpatient treatment program. Now it's time for the next step of recovery. While going home may seem like a relief after so much time in treatment, for some people, the thought is overwhelming, especially if you're in a triggered environment or don't have a strong support system at home. Between the stress of work, family, and social pressures, the coping mechanisms learned in the calm environment of treatment can prove difficult to apply in the real world.
If you're committed to living a sober lifestyle but aren't ready for life at home, a halfway house could be a viable option. Good halfway houses provide structure, support, and accountability to those who are new to recovery and are committed to a life without their addiction. Many people choose a halfway house to start recovery in a temptation-free environment. Others go for the recovery services, such as group counseling and access to 12-step meetings. For individuals who might be starting their recovery after incarceration, a halfway house can help them find employment by offering specific job-seeking services and guidance. One of the best ways to find the right halfway house is through your inpatient or intensive outpatient treatment program. A good facility will help you develop a personalized aftercare plan, which may include recommendations for trusted halfway houses or sober living facilities near you.
And that was our recovery rundown with my man James and what's the other lady's
Melinda.
Name? Melinda. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting her name. And with more insight on this topic, my brother, Reverend Christian Jansen. What do you got to say about this, bro? Hey,
I like the way you say that, Reverend.
Hey, it's because it's the truth.
Yeah. You know, this first off, it was a great segment, well produced by James and Melinda.
Awesome.
And written by James. And, you know, I think we often in the recovery world know these terms, like sober living, treatment, halfway house, transitional living. Mm-hmm. And we understand the difference, but there's a lot of people who don't know.
Yeah.
Right? So I like that he went and gave this 30,000 foot view of this topic. And I think that it is complicated because when people, like, let's say you have a loved one and they're having a drug alcohol problem. Mm-hmm. What people do is, what are you going to do? Well, Google it, right? Treatment centers near me.
Right. Yeah.
And what these treatment centers do is they set up, and no names, but I had a guy came to me once and he wanted me to set up 10 different web pages for his treatment center. He wasn't even the treatment center. He was a broker.
Yeah.
And so he wanted different websites for different substance use orders and stuff like that. I'm not saying they weren't going to connect him to a reputable, but I'm just saying that loved ones end up kind of going down this rabbit hole and they don't know how to navigate.
Because they don't know. That's why that information is good. I hope people are listening and understanding like the jargon, like the way things are termed, the names of it and everything.
Yeah.
Because, and that is a difficult thing because where I come from, the terminology is a little bit different up north.
Okay.
Like I've always thought of a halfway house as a place that you have to go to. Not, I mean, it's a halfway house, but it's a place that you have to go to as a part of your sentencing when you're coming out of a prison or jail.
Right.
We called, recovery homes, like when you go through for addiction, we call those three-quarter houses or recovery homes.
Right.
But I like the whole subject because he gave a lot of insight on what an inpatient program specializes in, what you can get whenever you get to, you know, your treatment plan. You know, what does IOP offer somebody that's still living at home and has an outlet to be able to learn and grab the tools of recovery?
Exactly. And I think that's the thing, like a lot of people don't know. So when they think, okay, if I want to get sober, I got to go away for, 60 days, some people a year, right?
Right.
But there are other options, like an intensive outpatient. The people don't even know IOP, right?
Right.
Because I've used that in conversations. They go, what's the? Yeah. Right.
Who?
But that allows people to work and go. And this is the thing too. Like I know people who got sober with a dollar in the basket, right? Just going to meetings. And not everyone does that. Some people like me, I had to go to treatment.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go somewhere, sit down, be removed from my, this is a key, right? Like you gotta be you have to be able to know and reputable people to talk to. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of intuitively knew because I was given that opportunity by my work. They said, hey, Steve Harvey and them said, we're going to send you to go to rehab. We're going to pay your salary. We're going to keep your job open.
You're good.
Now, when I was in rehab, I was the only one with that deal.
Right.
Everybody else was coming out to no homes, no jobs, no money. I was coming back to something really secure.
Right.
But I needed that removal from my environment. So I could sit down for a while and focus on myself.
Well, you know, I like that he broke the prices down of an inpatient program because you going to where you were going was a true blessing, man. Because a lot of guys, if you don't have money and you don't have insurance, there's that whole inpatient part of it is going to be very rare for somebody to get in there.
Yeah.
And that's why they go to, you know, they go straight from like a detox center to maybe straight to a recovery home with a program, a residential treatment program where they could start paying rent, where they can like do the program and start making their own money
right
quickly because they just don't have the outlet. Ideally, I would like, it would be to me, in my opinion, it would be a detox, an inpatient program between 28 and 60 days at least.
Yeah.
Then a treatment plan that has something to do with like a 90 and 90, a residential treatment program with some IOP and some programming around it. To me, that's an ideal place.
Right. Which you know? You're talking about like a year.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, because I didn't start seeing halfway clearly until a year.
Yeah, man.
It takes a long. So if you've been using drugs for 20 years straight, you know, and then you stop, I mean, yeah, 30 days is not very long inside of a treatment. And if you go to that and then you think you're going to jump right out, that's why these places exist.
That's why they exist.
But I will say, like, the place I went to, there are a lot of nonprofit treatment centers, you know?
Yeah.
Our guest, right? The place where he went to, very affordable. Mm-hmm. For the long term that you're there, very affordable. For where I went, Penfield Christian Homes, it was like, you know, it's very affordable, under $4,000.
Yeah.
Right.
It's wow, still a lot. That's amazing.
But it's still
that's awesome.
It's very affordable. And that's a place where you're gonna get, like, I got the steps, I got a licensed counselor, you know, we got the spiritual component. I mean, they really approached recovery on all the facets of the human, right?
And I love that.
And but that's the thing, like, so we have an episode, it's called Interview with the Interventionist. Mm-hmm. It's on the app. And we interview Graham. And Graham breaks down a lot of this stuff. So, like, if you're watching this.
Check that out.
Yeah. And if you're watching this and you got someone and you want to know more, that interview is like a wealth of information for a loved one who's got somebody who's struggling and they don't know what to do.
Absolutely. So there you have it, folks. Some more information on the topics of inpatient programs. I'm sorry. IOP. Residential treatment programs, things like 90 and 90s, recovery homes, all that kind of stuff. That information is valuable, and that's why we show it on the Recovery Rundown. Well,
real quick, before we cut out.
Right.
Tell them a little bit about one of the ministries you're working with, Coming Home Ministries.
All right.
And let's shine a little light. Not like you need any light on you guys right now, but just to let them know, like, because what you're working in, you're dealing with this on an everyday basis.
Yes. So Coming Home Ministries, what we do is our ministry, we used to have a recovery home, a place where an actual house where people stayed at. And we had somewhat of a program for them to live at and, you know, work the steps and things of that nature. We had a Bible studies there and stuff like that. However, we wanted our outreach to be bigger. So, man, we prayed about it. We got together and we started. We networked with different recovery homes, residential treatment programs, okay, all around Atlanta, all around Georgia. And we came up with, we currently work with about 14 recovery homes and treatment programs. And what we do there is when you're coming out of detox or you're coming out of jail or you're on the street and you don't have any money or no insurance, right, you fill out an application at Coming Home Ministries. We do an assessment on you. We get to know you a little bit while you're going through the detox process, hopefully. And we get you to a residential recovery home with a program as soon as possible. And we pay your intake fee and your first month's rent.
Yeah. Huge opportunity.
It's a blessing from God because we get it from a thrift store, dog.
Yeah, right. That thrift store money is no joke.
Yes.
But also, too, like, you're working with 14 different ones. So you have some that are going to have variant levels of care. Mm-hmm. So some places are going to take dual diagnosis, co-occurring disorder, where someone has a mental health issue like bipolar, schizophrenia, or high anxiety or clinical depression and addiction. Some places are going to be really well suited. They're going to have a tighter program.
Yeah. So the blessing in all this for me personally is being able to network with all these different styles of recovery treatment programs, right? Because everybody kind of like has their own thing. They have their own way of doing things. And me being able to be networked with so many of them is that when somebody comes to me and is looking for recovery, I can like kind of custom fit you to where I think you would do well at.
Right.
And that's a big advantage too for the suffering addict, I think.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so to that point, if anyone's looking for just some guidance on this kind of stuff, you can directly contact Most High.
Yes.
And we can get you connected with someone like David, like Graham, and help you along the way and help to lead you to your own recovery. Because, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago that when somebody comes to me and wants to get help for their loved one, the first person I'm trying to minister and work with is the person asking for the help, which is the parent or the wife, right?
Right. Because there's a reason why they're asking,
yeah.
and the person that needs the help is not asking.
That's right. And then people don't understand, and they don't know, or they don't feel safe going to, say, an Al-Anon meeting or talking to
Or they don't even know about it.
Or they don't even know it exists. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So, again, man, if you don't have any money and you're looking to change your life, you don't have any insurance, and you're looking for treatment and you're looking for recovery, www.cumminghomeministries.org. Fill out the application. I will get to you personally and try my best to be helpful, and my ministry will.
And if you're not from Georgia, that's the name of the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so weird. Because if you ain't from Georgia and you just heard that domain name, you think we on some foolishness. We are not. That is just the name of the city.
It's the place, man. It's the Lord's house, Christian.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who've been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable. That's why.
We packed up to tell the story of a young lady who lost her daughter.
So there's a extremely high correlation between suicide, mental illness, and substance abuse.
Come on the ground. Come on the ground. Sir.
I think as of this year, there's about 14 million people in America who have a co-occurring disorder, and a little more than 7% of them seek help for it.
You know, in my addiction, I felt like I was better off dead.
I'm here to talk about my daughter, Megan, who committed suicide when she was 28.
There's enough hope in the people that do recover to where I keep going and keep showing up at places where I'm needed.
If you need some things like love and change, I'm not talking coins and things or diamond rings. Everybody wants some change, but don't nobody want to do nothing till the pain they can't stomach. And they told me that I believed them, so I gave them to the everybody thought that I was tripping, saying that I'd be acting different.
Hey guys, one more time, real quick. cumminghomeministries.org. If you need help, if you want to change your life, if you're a suffering addict that doesn't want to be in addiction anymore and you want to try something new, hit that up, all right? Now, that being said, we are going to get to the meat of this program, right? And it's all about the Most High Show is all about getting to know somebody. Getting to know a person who sits in this chair of service and is courageous enough to be vulnerable and share a little bit about himself. And tonight, that man is Austin.
Hello.
Nice to meet you, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm all right.
Tonight.
I'm all right.
So what does today look like for you?
Today was pretty awesome. Nothing really happened, but I think that's what's awesome.
Oh, real quick, and one thing that I just found out is that you are celebrating 1 year of recovery right now. Congratulations, my bro. Congratulations, dude.
I made it a year and a day.
Awesome, awesome. So today is a cool day for you.
It is. It's I was writing at work today about a year ago and where I was a year ago.
Yeah.
Where I am now. And just how different that 1 year has made. And I'm in a residential treatment program, so there's a lot of time to think. There's a lot of time to reflect on life for what it was. And things are very different than when I was just coming in.
Cool. Now, what I want to do right now is, I guess we're going to do some reflecting. So what I would like to for you to do, is, if you can, is, you know, today was a good day, like you said, right? But it wasn't always like that, right? So there's a journey of some struggling and some hard times that kind of leads into things.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So how about you, wherever you feel comfortable to start your story with us, why don't you start from there?
Yeah, my story was, it got a little sideways pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You could call it a broken home. Just mom really trying to make it. She met a guy when I was real little. Got married when I was 3, and at 8, he had become abusive and had abused me in a pretty much every way that you can abuse a kid.
So is that like a stepdad? You're a stepdad, or they were just
boyfriend? He adopted me, so it's actually
your dad.
It's my dad.
Yeah.
But once he started abusing me, and I didn't do the right thing back then. I didn't speak out as loud as I, in hindsight, should have.
Yeah.
Which led to a lot of problems at home, a lot of problems in life in general, trust issues. I did speak out. I wasn't believed.
That happens a lot.
It does, but it also didn't help that with traumatic event survivors, like the abuse, like this man had... it got to sexual abuse, but he had tied me to trees. He had hogtied me, he had beat me up. All of these things. If you do that to a young kid, they end up acting out in any way that they can to get attention on themselves, as long as it's not from that one person. Mm-hmm. And I realized that through therapy, a lot of it, that those ways of acting out will mimic ADHD, and they will mimic a lot of other...
Very similar.
It's very similar.
You could easily be diagnosed with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what happened to me. So at 8, I was trying my best to deal with all the stuff that had happened to me, and I was put on Ritalin. And it was when I was in 4th grade, that was about the heyday of Ritalin. It was getting pushed on everybody. If you were too talkative, Ritalin. If you were,
it was the thing when I was.
If you were
kid,
hurt, like, and you're acting out and trying to get some help, and the only way that you know how as a kid that's been told, "I'll kill you if you tell," I'm going to act out in school, and school's not going to matter so much when I'm scared to go home. So it's like, here's some Ritalin. Go deal with your problems. As long as you're quiet in class, we're okay.
Yeah.
So I was taking Ritalin since 8, and it took me until, I don't know, 17 to realize I didn't like being a zombie. I didn't like pills. I never liked the way they made me feel. They turned off everything. They took the bad. That was cool. But they also took all the good. So I stopped taking the
meds. Takes everything, just leaves you blank.
It leaves you just...
Yeah.
Just...
I think zombie's a good word.
Zombie is probably the best way I could describe it. I mean, it takes away joy. It takes away any kind of happiness.
Especially when you're sad. Especially when it's not necessarily what should be given to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
For your situation.
When you don't even think you have ADD. Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah. It basically just taught me, hey, if I can take these pills and... it makes everybody around me happy.
Oh,
that's cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, now all I got to do is take pills, but I didn't like pills. So my friends were like, here's some booze. I definitely like booze. Booze was so, my thing at 17.
So at 17. So, but before then, I just want to know, like, when does this like invasion stop?
My parents got divorced when I was 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. So I guess he had moved out around 9, something like that. Yeah. So it finally ended, the abuse stopped after, the worst event. There was enough going on with him, that mom
beyond
anything that beyond had to do with the
freaking mad violation he was doing.
Yeah. Beyond that, he had other stuff going on that mom was keen to and wasn't cool with. So they were on there. He was on his way out. I think he did it. I don't know why he did it, but I think that a lot of it had to do with they were already in the process of ending their relationship. So that ended and I don't know. So fourth grade, the first time was when they were getting divorced. And then I had to retake fourth grade and he was out of the picture. But it was, man, one of the things that hurt so bad. And I wish I could go back and tell myself that it was okay to feel this way was no matter how bad he hurt me, I always wanted to be with him. Like I just wanted him to love me.
Yeah.
I just wanted.
That's what you're begging for. You're hoping for like a real love, a true, like what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
You're hoping for that the whole time.
With him, he had adopted me when I was 3. So he wasn't my real dad. My real dad had already bounced when I was born. So now I got this guy who, he hurts me, but that's when I'm bad. If I'm good, he loves me. So I still want this. And, in one of my therapies, I started crying and I was like, I don't know why I wanted to be with him, because that was a question that my mom had asked me was, why did you always want to be around him if he was hurting you? And I was like, I don't have a good answer for that. And the answer was, he's your dad. Like,
he's your dad, and you're a kid that wants his dad.
An
innocent kid wants love from his dad, man.
And it was that. And it was like, that's a normal thing. Like, it's his...
Totally weird. No matter what,
didn't want that.
Absolutely.
So it was like that was one of the big things that my therapist actually told me was, it would be super weird if you didn't want that affection and that love from your dad,
right?
Because that's what little boys want. They're like, you're supposed to be able to look up to that guy.
Yeah, he's like your idol, man.
Yeah, he's supposed to be.
He's supposed to be your Superman,
right?
You know
what I mean? Then when even if that Superman is hurting you, you're supposed to love them.
And it's of course, like, and you're making excuses. So, you're doing, like you said, you know, cause I'm bad. It's, you know, you're still blaming yourself. All
or
kinds
it's here's
of stuff.
Some meds. Now you're not even going to think about it. Now you're just going to be sitting with it and unable to even really talk, contemplate, think, work it out. So, I mean, if I could tell myself as a little kid, it'd be just, you're not the reason. Like, keep wanting to love people, because once you stop doing that, your life is going to go way worse. Like, it's going to go way more sideways once you stop trying to love people, because that's eventually where I ended up was I didn't want to love anybody. I didn't want anybody in my life.
Well, I hope that you are repeatedly telling yourself that, because that is the 100% absolute truth.
Absolutely.
That's the reality of all that you've been through, man.
It took a while. I was just sharing a story when I was getting my chip last night. When I got to treatment, I hated myself. I absolutely hated everything about life. I only went to that treatment center because I promised somebody I would try it before I killed myself. So when I got there, it was very clear to everyone I did not want anything to do with anybody. I wasn't happy to be there. I wasn't happy to be me. And one of the guys that's in the program with me, it might have been 3 weeks, something like that. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks in, he was like, "You're better than what you think you are. People like you, so get over it." Like, you're gonna have to start loving some people back, because you have something that people like. And well, it took a while to believe him, but yeah. Nowadays I'm starting to.
Well, we are going to get to all. Shout out to No Longer Bound. We're gonna get to that definitely. But I would like to go to 17 now. Okay, mm-hmm. So you have this time period where this violator, this mess of a person, is not doing the things that he was doing to you anymore. So you have this gap, and then you get to 17. But during the meantime, you're just taking Ritalin's the answer, right? Yeah, well, Ritalin is not the answer.
It's not the answer that I want.
But that's what they're feeding you, right? Yep. So then you have this gap, and then 17.
My then it had gotten to Vyvanse and something else by that time.
Oh, but, yeah, different stuff going on throughout the years.
Yeah, right? same effects, different name.
And then I guess, do you get introduced to alcohol at 17?
Yeah, I think the first time I ever was around it was at the time my best friend's house. Just some of the nastiest, just crap vodka, and it was me and his buddies just getting drunk and playing football in the front yard, and it was a lot of fun. But looking back on it, like even then, I knew I was drinking a little different than they were.
Even then, like off your first
off the rip, I knew.
Yeah.
And it was off the rip, I knew that it, whatever that feeling was that it gave me, I wanted that feeling always.
Yeah.
And I started, they would take a shot, I'd take a couple. They would drink, they'd steal a beer or two from his dad. I'd take four or five, and then I'd be like, I'd hide them, and I'd come back later. But once I started drinking, that was what I wanted.
That was your thing.
It was a weird way to get there. I wanted to be a cop, and I was involved with the sheriff's department, and I got
so caught. So I just real quick, probably to like in your mind, you probably think I want to be a cop to protect.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely wanted to protect little kids.
Yeah,
and ironically, also I wanted to work narcotics. I wanted to stop. It all plays into who hurt me. Like all of it plays in, because the time that he tied me to that tree, he left me there. He came back acting stupid. And I didn't know it at the time because I was a kid, but now I know, you got high. Yeah. Like, okay. So I wanted to do the law enforcement thing, and the same kid that I was drinking with, we skipped school. It was senior skip day, only day I ever skipped school, and we got.
What caught. Is your education like? Are you doing well in school, like throughout that time?
Yeah, at 17, I was doing very well actually. Mm-hmm. School was never a problem for me. I liked learning. If I cared about the subject, I killed it. If I didn't care, I'm still that I don't care. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
But at this point, I was working towards law enforcement. I was in their Explorers program. I was doing very well. But we got caught because the guys that I was with were stealing, and there was a bolo out from a car. So we got pulled over, and I immediately have to go to the sheriff's department, fess up to what I had done. And I lose the opportunities that were coming my way after graduation. So when that was taken from me, I just went balls to the wall with it. Yeah. I gave up. I stopped caring about school. I stopped caring about anything. I basically, I think I had 2 months left in school. Mm-hmm. Almost dropped out. Like it just, everything up to that point was, I'm done. Like I'm done with everything. The one thing that I did have going well for me, I just blew up. So let's see what happens. I'm going to start drinking. I'm going to, at this point I hadn't smoked weed yet, but I was like, first chance I get, I'm definitely smoking
everything. You're open to anything and everything. I'm open to it.
Yeah. I still didn't mess with pills. They weren't my thing, just from the Ritalin and stuff. I didn't, I had a thought in my head that that's how all pills would be. So I'm actually glad that I never got into them.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
My friends saved me on that. Yeah. But at 17 to 18, it was rough. It was definitely me first. I'm going to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. First time ever, I'm not going to be grounded. I don't care what anybody says to me.
Right.
I'm not going to be told to go to school, told what to do. I'm going to make my own choices and because I know best, which I absolutely did not.
So I would say you got through high school by the hairs of your chinny chin chin.
Yeah, I did. I actually got through high school because I had a teacher that I did not like who gave a shit about her students. She tracked me down, found out where I was staying, showed up on the front porch one day and said, "You're coming back to school. You're
too damn, we need more teachers like that."
We do. We do. And I didn't like her. I didn't like her at all. Actually, she was a language arts teacher and, I didn't like this woman. I was very disrespectful to this woman often. And, she showed up one day and said, you're too smart to do this. Like, what are you doing? You need to go home, say whatever you need to your mom, say, sorry, you got 2 months, come ACE test like you're going to, cause this is what you do with tests. Mm-hmm. You don't do any homework. You don't study, but you can pass tests and you're smart. Don't screw up your senior year.
Yeah.
So I went back to school and,
got through it.
To her. I got through it. Got accepted into college, dropped out soon after because I didn't want to go. It was by that time.
So you went and was like, that's not it.
Well, I went to Perimeter, which is nothing against Perimeter, but it was just a larger, more expensive high school.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to be there. So I just started working by that time, but free time didn't exist. It was, I'm going to go party. Where's the booze?
It's escalating. You're still escalating.
Oh yeah. I'm still escalating. Just working. This point I'm playing paintball. Trying to go pro, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. I'm trying every avenue that I can to have a fun life.
Yeah.
With doing as little work as possible.
Yeah. Party life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not working out. It's not going anywhere for me.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Unfortunately.
So that went on until about 23, 24.
Well, you said that you knew like from the beginning that the way what you're getting out of like drinking and hanging out with these dudes and how much you're consuming is definitely not matching your friends, right?
Yeah, it's not jiving.
So when you get into your 20s, are you ever saying to yourself, "Man, I got a problem"?
Yeah, there were times. Yeah. They were few and far between, but there was definitely times where I had told myself, "You need to calm down." Things were starting to happen. It was really weird. It took me a long time, no matter how much I drank, to get to the point where I was blacking out. But I remember
you had a pretty good tolerance.
I had an amazing tolerance. Yeah. It was scary how much I can drink. I'm talking like two handles a night. Like I'm going hard and people are like looking at me like that's not good. Like whatever.
So you're probably being told by friends, "Hey man."
By this time I am. I've gone through a lot of friends that were right. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't ready for them to be telling me information that I didn't want to hear. I liked being drunk. I liked the confidence it gave me. I liked the feeling it gave me, and I wasn't done.
Yeah.
So it was, if you think I have a problem, just don't chill with me. Like, and I'm cool without you.
And that attitude goes on for a little while, right?
Till I'm 32.
Same thing.
It's the same. I'm seeing what really changed though in my 30s was the friends that were leaving were the ones that had been with me since day one. And it's like, okay.
What is their reasons for leaving though? Just their journey.
Part of
is not
them,
work. Their trajectory is different than yours at that time.
Yeah. I mean, families, they're having kids.
They're
growing up. Yeah. They're working in careers now. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to get absolutely obliterated every waking moment.
That was an eye opener for me when I realized, wait a minute, I'm the only person doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody else has like jobs and lives.
Or it's a, "Hey, you want to come over and drink?" And it's like, yeah. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm still pouring stupid amounts of alcohol. Yeah. And everybody's like, "We have to go to work tomorrow. Like, be quiet. Like, you can't leave. We're not giving you your keys, but we're not doing this. Like, you need to chill. You're too much. And it was when those people started telling me that, that I was like, okay, I think.
So now it's a deeper, look.
Basically, it was my brother. I call him my brother. We've been homies since 15, mm-hmm. and I'm 32. And he's like, I can't hang out with you. I can't have you around my family because we don't know what you're going to be like. Mm-hmm. If you're happy, it's cool. And we love having you around.
Yeah.
Like, you're fun. You're funny. You always have been. But when you have a bad night, yeah. everyone has a bad night.
Oh man.
And it was like, okay, I started to think, how many birthdays I've ever ruined? Like, why am I not invited to this event when friends that you barely know
that's
are.
A tough look, man.
And it's like, okay, I think you're right. Like, I think I do need some help. And it took one of the hardest years that I've had to live through to get me to that point to where I am even able to look at it that way. But
so what you did, well, you just took us to right before you get help. All right. Yeah. And we're going to get to that. All right. But first, we're going to listen to this quick message from the Most High Show. And then when we come back, we're going to get to the other side of things after this.
Montana Society, an inspiring docuseries about a group of addicts who endeavor to repurpose an underground nuclear bunker in Paradise Valley, Montana. Along the way, they learn to work together under the wild leadership of Dean, a financial guru and outdoorsman who has his money on the line. In the end, will they learn to repurpose their pain and the bunker into something new and wonderful? Find out on this season of the Montana Society.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. So hopefully you guys are still tuned in and you heard this. Just a powerful, powerful discussion with my brother Austin, man. And the first thing I want to say is thank you for sharing that. I think what you had to say needs to be heard. There's people that aren't saying things like that, or just like you said at the very beginning, you know, you did the wrong thing. You didn't say anything. And when you did, you didn't, you know, so being able to have that bravery to share this part of your life with us and with every, you know, with everyone else is a true blessing. That's why I consider that the seed of service, because you're doing a tremendous act of service, sharing that part of your life with us now. But now, all right, we're going somewhere. Okay. We're getting to where you actually give sobriety a chance. Right. Yeah. So why don't you take us there?
Yeah, so at 32, at this point I had burned every bridge. I was with a girl who we ended up getting pregnant and we lost the baby, which that kind of that threw me mentally. Over the edge of what I was,
I can imagine,
willing to deal with. At this point, I had known God. I had known the cult too. I had known, so in my mind it was, all right, I know the dark exists. I know the light has to.
Yeah. That's good.
But I don't.
That's great to know.
But I also don't know. I don't know God. I don't really know Jesus. I know I've prayed that prayer of save me multiple times, and it had felt like nothing had changed. I didn't have any heart change or mind changed, and situations didn't change. So I had gotten here to where now I'm just angry. Now I'm angry at God. I'm angry at the world. I'm angry that I don't get to have my daughter. I don't get to have the woman that I was with ended up having to have some really serious surgeries due to complications with the miscarriage. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't going to be able to have any more kids. And I was,
oh man,
I was angry for her. I was angry for me.
Yeah,
I was
mad.
Like, I was just mad.
Mad about everything.
And I was letting God know it every chance that I got drunk. And it put me on, track for a pretty bad bender. Mm-hmm. Probably, I was writing about this today. It was, probably a good month and a half where I might eat twice a week. Anything else that's going into me is alcohol. And during that time, I quit a job that I had for like 8 years. I told everybody to, KMA, and I'm done. I'm done with everybody.
That's kiss my ass.
That is kiss my ass. All right. I'm trying to work on the cussing thing.
No, I got it. Don't worry. I'll take care of it.
But it really got to that point where I was burning every bridge. I was done.
Well, this is like the quick road to the end. That's where you're going.
I was planning the end.
Yeah.
The night that I actually was saved, mm-hmm. Was a night that I had called my aunt, cause I had planned to kill myself, and I was actually calling her to let her know where she would be able to find the car so that they could have the car.
Okay.
She was like, well, basically if you have that option, if that's what you want to do, whoa, but I have somewhere that can help you if you're willing. And I was like, I don't believe that is possible. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I'm very scared of what's going to happen to me afterwards, after what I do, what mm-hmm. I'm about to do. It's a heavy option. It's a heavy choice to make. So that night, I remember talking to her for about an hour or so, completely, completely drunk. Mm-hmm. But after I hung up the phone, I hit my knees, and I was, I heard one time a priest say, don't ever discredit the prayers of a drunk man, because you'll never hear a more honest prayer. Mm. And that night I prayed my most honest. I said, God, I don't know how to do this. I don't even know why I'm as angry as I am. Wow. Most of the time. So if you can help me and you can take my need for drinking away from me, I'll serve you. I'll do whatever you ask me to do from that point on, but you got to take this from me because I cannot do it anymore.
Wow.
And, within
what a, like a life-saving conversation with your aunt that leads to salvation.
She is a prayer warrior. So is my grandmother. Both of them.
Oh, so you did have that influence a little bit, right?
I did. I had enough,
but you were
it.
Not with it, right?
I wasn't for it because I didn't understand why God would do the things that he'd done or understood. Allowed to happen.
Right.
Had I, in my mind, that stuff doesn't happen to good people. But up until that point, it was also a whole lot of, I don't deserve this. Why did you do this to mm-hmm. me? It was a lot of that.
Why?
That victim mentality where it's.
Well, I think that's fitting.
It is
fitting. In your situation,
it is
to
fitting,
be honest.
As well, it is fitting, but it's also. When I say victim mentality, it's a whole lot of, it's not that I was a victim. It's the, I'm going to play this role up as
pity,
much
pity,
as I
yeah,
can.
Yeah,
pity.
Yeah, yeah.
That the pity card. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at is, it's easy to play, but it's also like, I don't feel like God would do this to somebody that deserves rather than God did this to somebody that can withstand it to help somebody that can't. Like, ooh. So if I'm able to say that thing to myself that I did at the beginning of this show to anybody else that's ever felt that way, like that's why I had to go through that.
And so, that's what you are doing right now,
exactly.
Brother, at this moment.
Exactly. Man. So I called my aunt. She got in contact with No Longer Bound, which, is where God answered my prayers. I was told to, detox before I showed up.
Let's talk about that, because this kind of like brings everything up to a full circle with the information piece that we had earlier. Mm-hmm. Why don't you explain to the people what is No Longer Bound?
No Longer Bound is a treatment center out in Cumming, Georgia, the city. And it It's actually, it's pretty cool because they have you pay for the first 3 months and then the rest is all taken care of through funding that you get through the thrift shops, through their
donations,
fundraising.
Yeah.
So it's a 1 year, people call it a Jesus camp, but it's really, the way I would describe it is it's the place that God works. Like God, it's God's house. You just show up and you're like broken and he fixes you there.
Man, I've heard nothing, but I know some people from No Longer Bound, some cool, awesome folks from there, man. Every person that I've come across that is a resident or a part of No Longer Bound, man,
I can't say cool anything bad about it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a cool place.
It's always changing. It's forever changing. Mm. But from what I've seen and gone through is your time there is special. Like God's changing, bringing people in and out, and he's got you there for the time that you need to be there. And as long as you show up and do the work and you're honest to yourself, with your team, with the brothers there, God's going to show up and do some crazy things for your life.
So check this out. So check this out real quick. All right. So I want you to see my picture that I have of your story that you're telling me, right? So you're suicidal.
Yeah.
Pissed off at the world.
100%.
A victim of all these, you know, and even might even be playing the victim card at this time of your life, right? And you are definitely an alcoholic, to say the least, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you make this choice. I mean, you know, you have this moment with God. What is arrival to a sober living? What is walking through the door with all that, walking in No Longer Bound? What does that look like, man? What? Has to be very weird.
Super weird. It's still super weird for every new guy that I see. Walking in with the mindset that I brought into it, especially, is different. Because at that point, by the time that day came around, I'd already given up. I'd already made my choice. I was going to give this a shot, say it didn't work, and I was still going to continue about my business. I did not expect God to show up. I was expecting my prayers to go on like every other prayer had, which was in my small point of view, unanswered.
Yeah.
That ain't what happened. I was told to detox, didn't drink until the day I showed up. I show up and I'm greeted by a strange dude who's like, "Love you, buddy." Gives me a hug. And I'm like, I gotta go. Like, I made a huge mistake.
I love you, man.
And like, they're like, okay, so for leading up to this day, for the last 8 years, I've purposely held one job, and it's because there's only three people in that company, and I'm one of them. Okay. I don't have to speak to people. I can remain drunk or high all the time. I don't have friends that want to hang out with me, so I'm usually alone. I'm so isolated that I'm cool with not talking to people for weeks on end. And now somebody's trying to take my stuff from me so that they can carry it. And they're giving me a hug and saying that they love me. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't even love me, so you're full of it. Like,
and questioning all that. Like, then this is some BS, man.
Then it's like, I'm looking at my aunt. Yeah. Have you already paid? Because you should get your stuff back because I want to go home. This isn't where I need to be. And I had a conversation with one of the guys doing my intake. And he's like, this is going to be a lot. And it's going to be a shock. And it's going to be something that you are not used to. But stay. Like, give it a week. I was like, screw it. What's another week? I can do that. Mm-hmm. I can fake it if I have to.
Right.
So I go in. The guys are as nice as they can be. I'm still DTing, of course. So it's
Drying out like
it. Drying out.
That's hardcore.
Going to sleep. My roommate, I'm pretty sure I had some mental, I know I had some mental issues, but I'm pretty sure I had some medical issues.
Right.
Coming down DT and
dangerous, man.
It is. I should not have done it that way. If you're thinking about getting help, do it safely. Seizures are real. Potential for death is very real.
Absolutely.
But I ended up spending about 4 days in bed, just really crappy days. But on that
going through it.
Yeah. I woke up that fourth day with a shake, still cloudy headed. But I realized, like, for the first time ever, I didn't want to drink to get rid of those shakes. So I was like, okay, that's weird. And then I was like, that's probably going to fade. I'm waiting until I get pissed off about something. I want to drink then. And then it was like 2 weeks later. I was like, I still don't want to drink. Okay, shit. I've told God I'm going to do what he wants me to do for the rest of my life if he does this one thing. And I'm pretty certain that he's done this thing. Now what do I need to do?
I can only explain that right there, because that's a very vulnerable place to be at, right?
Yeah.
Because you can make a move if you need to, and you're shaking, and you're literally detoxing off of alcohol.
Yeah.
That's a God thing. To me, that's a higher power thing that Absolutely. Got you through specifically that moment, that time. Absolutely. That's hard, man.
Well, especially for somebody that's got as huge of trust issues and just belief issues, for me to actually have that conscious thought of, he answered you, dude. Like,
oh yeah.
He did what you asked him to.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, so I'm thinking,
it's confirmation.
This is real. Like, this isn't just the angry cloud man. Like, this is not just somebody that spitefully ruined my life. Like, this is a
loving,
This is a God that just saw me planning out to take myself out, who has now gotten me to, I'm about 2 weeks clean. I'm thinking, you saved my life. Now I have to, I have made a bargain with you that I want to uphold now and that I need to uphold now, which is something that I can't say I've done if it didn't involve alcohol, drugs, or money. I haven't upheld any agreement.
That's like a holistic spiritual motivation, man.
And it's what I'm saying? Me there. It's honestly what kept me at No Longer Bound was, it used to be a lot more faith-based, I think. But like I said, it's always
moving, constantly moving.
So it's like, you could talk to somebody that came in 1 week to somebody that came in the next following week, and it's two completely different programs already. Right. So I'll hear people talking about their God stories and what they went through. And that's why I say, I think he shows up when and how he needs to for the people that he's got there at that time.
Yeah. 'Cause
that's what kept me there. And I've watched people go through their own walks with not believing to becoming believers because of what they've seen happen there.
Amen.
And it's like,
it's a spiritual time, man.
It is.
You want to see a higher power work, be in places like that where people are desperate and they are sincerely looking beyond themselves for an answer.
And I think that's the key. I think that's why those prayers in my past seemed to go unanswered, was because they weren't sincere. They were Hail Marys at most. They were just like, don't let me go to jail. Like, I don't want to, oh, don't let me die this time. Looking at all of the stuff that's happened in my life and the amounts that I used to drink for fun, just because people would bring me bottles to say, watch this guy drink, like, just watch how much he drinks. And I'd drink it all. And I'd go to sleep. I'd wake up with like a groggy head, and people were like, that's enough to kill people. Like, what is wrong with you? I don't know, but he woke me up every time. And then he woke me up the time that I wanted to kill myself.
Yeah.
He made me hit my knees instead. And
that kind of puts, like, when you have that point of view, it kind of starts putting things into perspective. Like, God has kept me alive through all this craziness for a reason.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's like leads you to like this, and I think that's what you're going through now, this purpose driven life, you know?
Well, you're good book, by the way. You're told in like the steps process, you gotta become aware that you're powerless. and that there's a power greater than you. And it's like, that's easy. I've already done that. Like that was done for me. All he did. He answered my prayer, man. Yeah. And it, like, I'm alive because of it. I'm alive, amen, because my aunt knew a plan for me, and I chose to do it. So now it's like a year removed from that guy. I know the reasons why I was so sad, why I was so depressed and angry. And in a lot of ways, those were valid feelings to have, but they were never dealt with in a healthy way. They were always avoided. They were always skated around.
Backdoored.
You know what? I'm good. Like, I'm fine, dog. Like, don't worry about me.
Brushed off. Keep it moving.
Drink.
Here's some Ritalin.
Here's some
booze. Take a shot.
Here's some weed. Like, be a man. Yeah. Suck it up. And I'm realizing now it's God's not working if you're sucking it up.
Nah.
Like, you're having.
He's working if you're giving it up.
If you're giving it up, if you're telling people things that. There are conversations that happen at that place daily where you'll pick up on something that you've been struggling with for months. And all you need to hear is one phrase from this one person, and it makes things click in a way that is incredible. And you have that place providing those phrases daily. So it's,
that's that therapeutic value of one addict helping another, man.
Exactly. And
right,
it's
there.
It's, you've got to get, yeah, you're sick. We all are. We're in a treatment facility, dude. Like, we're all sick. But we're all sick in different ways.
Yeah.
We just have the same vices to deal
with
it.
There you go.
So if you're able to sit down, talk to somebody, and say, hey, this is what happened. This is how I'm dealing with it now. I'm going to get vulnerable with you. That alone, just saying, I'm going to trust you with my shit. Whoa. Now I want you to trust me with yours.
When you live such an untrustworthy type of life, everybody that you're supposed to depend on and trust has totally
failed,
destroyed that.
Yeah.
And then to be in a place to be like, and told, hey man, you got to give this up. You know, it's time to like show some trust, be vulnerable, open yourself up. That's a tough sell, man.
About 2 months in, it might be 3 months in now, you're asked to tell your life story where you break it down from birth to the day that you're standing there giving your life story. Mm-hmm. And you do it. When I had to do it, you did it in front of the entire community, and I shared everything.
Wow.
I went into detail about everything. I didn't want to leave anything out. And at the end of it, I had this guy who was, I love this guy. I didn't at the time. He was everything that I wasn't able to be. He was strong. He was vocal. He was confident. He was all of the stuff that I had always wanted to be. And he was like one of those kids in high school that I despised because I just wasn't that. And he ended up at the end of my story standing up, and he was crying. And he's like, I don't know if I should be angry because of what happened to you or just happy that you're here.
Yeah.
But he was like, you're not alone with what you went through. And he's like, I want you to hear what I say when I say this. You're not alone with what you went through. And he's like, I want to help you carry that. And It took me a little bit to understand what he was saying. Was he had been a victim too when he was growing up. It was a different parent that did it to him, but he had gone through the same trauma. And he was saying, I'm here to help you with that if you want my help. And it was like, that's all I want. Like, and that's what that place provides everybody that comes, if you're honest. If you're not honest, it'll chew you up and spit you out. But if you are honest, you're going to run into 30 dudes that want nothing other than to be your friend, be your brother, and help you. And
well, that interaction, that interaction between you and that guy is the reason why this studio exists, man. Because you don't know what your story right now, how that is affecting somebody else. That truly, it's a life-saving story, man.
Yeah.
And I mean that. You know what I mean?
I keep
somebody
hearing that.
Needed to hear that, you know, this dude that you wouldn't look at twice, right? That you kind of like despise for some reason,
yep,
gets up and shows you love because you were brave enough and courageous enough to like share that part of yourself.
And you know, when he did that, my entire attitude towards him changed.
It
changed the entire way I looked at his friends group. Mm. And now they're some of the closest people that I can.
They're the homies.
They're the homies
now.
Yeah, it's because I told you I was into the darker side of stuff for a while, and the enemy knows. I mean, he was the one that would worship the loudest and the prettiest. He knows how to get in your head and tell you the pretty lies that sound great. And
yeah.
I was talking to somebody before I came in here about how I'm nervous. I don't know what's going to end up happening. I just don't want to flub it up. And she said, you're there to say something that somebody needs to hear. And as long as you're talking, you're going to get there somewhere. It might not be pretty, but you're going to get there. And that's what's important.
I think you're doing an outstanding job explaining that and doing that right now.
But it's all through a confidence that I didn't know anything about. I didn't know anything about God for real.
Yeah.
I knew what punk me thought I knew, which was not much. And I'm learning each day is even less than I would want to, but it's.
Yeah. So you say you're learning each day. So let's talk about, let's give another look at today. What is going on in your life after this year? What's happening with you? What are you doing? What is your day like? You know, you're currently residing at No Longer Bound.
Dude, yeah, it's right? I'm an intern.
Rocking a year.
Yeah, I'm rocking a year. I'm there for another 6 months. I'm doing their internship program. So I've been doing their social media for about.
Now, is that offered to everybody like in a rotation type of way?
It was until I got in there, and now and
then you're like nobody else. Nobody
it
else.
Seems to not be.
It's just me now. I'm the intern.
For down there, it seems to be that way. They were supposed to replace me 3 months ago, but they never did. So I'm cool with it.
You liking it? You're learning? You doing the thing?
Yeah, it was. There was some resentments not too long ago. Be honest with you, because they were supposed to replace me. I was supposed to be off the Facebook. See, this whole thing, I got this position simply because it was a God thing. Yeah. It was like the guy before me messed up in a pretty big way, and they needed somebody. Yeah. And I was supposed to be doing their podcast and stuff. And I was like, I know how to edit. I know how to run that room. Give me that room. And we haven't done a single podcast, but it got me in that room.
Yeah.
And they've given me. God's given everything back, man.
Hey, man, it's like, all in God's time, too, man.
Exactly. You know but I mean? Was, back in the day, I was in radio, screwed that up. And getting it back was cool because it was God giving it back. But I noticed that the minute that it became about me and my ego and, oh, I know what to say to get to the people. I know how to do it. I know how to do it better than you, dude.
Right.
That's when the things started going sideways again, and it I had to check myself and say, you know what, dude, you're here to say what God tells you to say. Wow. You're not here to say whatever you think you know in your 6 months of sobriety. So once I realized
that's good, I like that.
I started writing what he told me to. I started reaching people that I had a dude from, I want to say Louisiana. That would follow us, and he ended up in the program, and he's like, it came because of what you were writing. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's big. And
that,
I was
that
like,
is big, man.
But it was also during what that time impact. Where I wasn't writing. I was writing what God wanted me to. I wasn't writing for myself. I wasn't out there judging my clicks, like how much engagement in my game.
It wasn't your stuff.
Right. It wasn't my stuff.
It was God's stuff.
It was what
stuff.
He needs me to say.
Yeah.
So it's like that stuff works. So why break that if it's working? So he gave me back photography, something that I used to love.
Oh, no doubt. Awesome.
So
yeah.
So I'm doing photography now again.
Sweet.
I'm getting gigs. Like I'm getting paid to do the things that I enjoy doing.
You hear that?
Right. Now I'm doing writing and photography. I used to do videos, starting to do videos again. So it's like every little thing that I had thought that I had broken and messed up so badly that I could never go back to, mainly out of shame for myself. He's like, no, just you had the wrong motivation behind it. Like, do it for me and you can do whatever you want.
It's amazing grace, bro.
It is. It's really cool. I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy... Each day I get to talk to somebody else that I'm going to do headshots for one of my boss's husband.
And
I'm
like,
so that's going to lead to something. I'm going to
network it out. Yeah, it's going to grow. Things
there's
are
guys
gonna happen.
That do real estate that need their houses to be shot for their listings. I'm going to be doing that. So it's I get to take pictures on sailboats with like the aftercare people, and yeah. it's like all of these opportunities that it's I really would never cool, have man. If I just yeah. show up with your camera, see what happens.
And I think the biggest blessing in it, of all this is your knowledge, knowing that this is God moving in your life.
I mean,
that's the blessing, bro. That knowledge is priceless.
It is, but it also comes with the other side of it is I saw what I did on my own, and it was not this. It was the exact opposite of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You need the Lord, man. You need the higher power, brother.
You do, and it's like the higher power. I've heard in a lot of rooms that's step four that gets people, and it's just admitting that you're not the biggest thing in the room, and that kind of stops people up. But it's cool to realize like I'm not the biggest thing in the room. I don't have to deal with these problems.
Like, wow.
One, they're already taken care of, and two, they're not really even my problems.
They're beyond you, man.
Most of the problems that we think are our problems don't have anything to do with us.
Nah.
So it's like once you can
remove it's usually our ego thinking like, oh, this is about me. I got to take care of it.
It's that pride thing that we all have that once we can set that down, it's gravy, dude. And life is so much less stressful.
Right. Well, bro, listen, man, you have shared so much, dude. And man, we love you, man. You know what I'm saying? Just like the stranger loves you. But no, man, you are sharing your story, you know, putting it down the way you did, man, is just so important and so appreciated, dude. From me, definitely, man. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Right?
But again, you shared so much, but I'm going to ask you for a little bit more.
All right, go for it.
We have a segment here.
Okay.
It's called Final Thoughts.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, if you would break this down, let's say, you know, you're no longer bound, and a new dude and suffering addict comes in. What are your words? How do they do it? How do they navigate it? Well, you know, what's your year word of wisdom? Words of wisdom.
There's a couple of things. One would be honest. The more honest, probably the better.
Mm-hmm.
No one around you has it figured out. Wow. Figuring it out isn't really even the goal, I don't think. I think the goal is being able to be honest with the people around you. Just to be honest enough to be who you are. Like, don't try and put the masks on. Like, take those off. Be honest with the people that can help you because they all have something that you want. If you're going into treatment, it's because you want to get better. Those people that work there are better.
They're getting
better. They're getting better daily. Yeah. Like they don't have all the answers and they're not done, but they definitely have something that you want.
Be a part of that.
Be a part of that. And also that whole being vulnerable thing and that love word, that word that gets thrown around so much, but people use it too much, I think, in the wrong ways.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell somebody that you love them, don't let it just be a phrase that you toss out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let it be an action before it becomes just a word.
Whoa.
Like, show them that you love them.
Yeah.
Like, even there's a guy in that program that irritates me so much just because he is who he is. But you know what? I love him. Like, as much as he irritates me, he's just an irritating dude. And like, that's who he is. And I love it because you can count on him to be him. And it's like, all right, that's refreshing. Cool. Love people for who they are. Love yourself. Like, give yourself a break. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. And just the advice that helped me a lot was you can screw up every day, all day long. But as long as you put your head on that pillow at No Longer Bound, you'll be all right. Just close your eyes and you'll wake up tomorrow, give it another shot.
There you go, folks. There you go, man. Again, Austin, thank you so much, bro. Yes, sir. Man, what a great story. Inspiring, brave, all that stuff, dude. Thank you again, man. And you heard it here, folks. Honesty. You know what I'm saying? Give yourself a break. Take it easy.
Yep.
Be open. and show that real love. And I want to thank you guys for tuning in, hanging out with us for this this segment of the Most High Show, man. We love you guys. Most High app, download it immediately, right now. Come on. Why don't you have it? T-shirts, hats, merch, people, Most High Life. Come on. Get that. We need that. We need your help.
It's the Netflix of recovery, right?
Damn right it is. Sure. Netflix of recovery. Thank you guys so much.